Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, doing a solo pod today. Didn't have a podcast for the last couple of days. Reason for that, went to Atlanta for some birthday celebrations of friends and myself, but also to get some good information, some good quotes, talk to a couple people for something that will be coming out in a couple of weeks. So I guess you guys can look forward to that teaser. But today we're just going to do a solo podcast. Matt is unavailable. James Herbert is unavailable and didn't want to wait another day to get a podcast to you guys. Appreciate the questions about where the podcast has been. It's just hard for me to record one when I am traveling. Not always easy to get that set up and to get the proper, you know, situation, noise, everything going, and especially to get a proper internet connection for Skype. You'd be surprised. Maybe you wouldn't be surprised if you travel enough, but you'd be surprised how many hotels just have horrendous internet connections. And I guess it makes sense when it comes to delivering internet to so many people in a hotel. But there are some hotels that do a really good job of, I don't know, you get at least 6 to 10 megabytes per second, and there's some that you're lucky if you get 1.5. So it's just not always that feasible. But we're back. I'm not traveling until All-Star weekend, and I think we'll have some stuff for you for All-Star Week, so you won't miss out on podcasts then. Was in Atlanta. Before we get into your questions, which you can always submit using hashtag EOBpod, you can also send questions to my email, zach.harper@cbsinteractive.com. But went to Atlanta, got to see two Hawks games at the Fortress, as the starters Lee Ellis calls it, and it was pretty cool. I'm catching the Hawks at a good time in terms of home games, because from talking to a few people around the organization, you know, it's the fans have been good, they've been supportive, but the crowds are not always that good. And now that the Hawks are so good, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later with a couple of questions, now that the Hawks are so good, you know, we're kind of in a situation where the local fans are really into it. There was a lot of national media there at the two games I ended up attending. I saw them take down the Oklahoma City Thunder. I saw them take down the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves were actually as competitive in their game against the Hawks as the Thunder were in theirs, which is weird. And I think it's just one of those random occurrences in the NBA. The Thunder jumped out to a pretty good lead. Well, not a good lead, but a good start in the first quarter against the Hawks that were actually leading after the first quarter. And the Hawks, just that tricky brand of basketball, execution, 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 just chipped away, eventually grabbed a double-digit lead, won their 15th in a row. Next game, grabbed a double-digit lead, won their 16th in a row. The Timberwolves were able to claw back into it a little bit and make it single digits for quite a while, but ended up losing by 12. But those Hawks, I think that's 16 straight games. They've won 16 straight games. They've had a double-digit lead. There's something crazy like 33-1 or 34-1 when they grab a double-digit lead this season. That one loss was that, I think it was early November, maybe mid-November, they lost to the Hornets. And it was that game that went to overtime. So they blew their double-digit lead. It went to overtime. Lance Stephenson banked in a three at the buzzer to win. So they're one Lance Stephenson banked three in overtime away from really being a perfect record with a double-digit lead. They have the best record in the East, second-best record in the league in terms of winning percentage behind the Golden State Warriors. And those Hawks are pretty good. I'm interested to see where it goes once playoff time happens. It'll be a little bit different situation just because the East is so weak. But, you know, there's some pretty decent teams in that last half of the playoff bracket that maybe can give them a little bit of trouble, maybe not. You probably won't see them falter, if they falter at all, until later rounds. But I actually had an interesting question. I was on an Atlanta radio station yesterday on my drive back from Atlanta to Miami, and I had an interesting question from the radio personality, saying it was Mark Zeno of 92.9 The Game. And he asked, you know, what would be considered a disappointment for the Hawks this season? You know, could they not get out of the first round and have the season still be a success because of how far they've come? Do they need to get to the second round, or they need to get to the conference finals? You know, what is it? I actually thought that, you know, first round would certainly be disappointing with the way we've seen them grow over the last season and a half and moving towards, you know, two full regular seasons under Mike Budenholzer. So I don't think you can get away kind of characterizing a first round exit as a non-disappointment, because they're too good now to not get to at least a second round. But I think the second round is kind of the baseline for them, where things are acceptable if they can't get past the second round, depending on who they lose to. Now, if they lost to Milwaukee or someone like that. No offense to Milwaukee, but they shouldn't lose to Milwaukee in a playoff series. If they lost to Chicago or Cleveland or Washington or Toronto, I think you can digest that a little bit easier if you're a Hawks fan and feel excited that with a couple of tweaks in the offseason, re-signing Paul Millsap, that heading into next season they could be, you know, a true title contender if they don't end up contending for the title this year. The Hawks are, they're a lot of fun to watch in person. Kyle Korver's a great show. Paul Millsap was fantastic. Jeff Teague's great. Paul Horford's great, Al Horford's great in person. The DeMar Carroll's great. It's a really fun team to watch in person. So let's get into your questions. First question coming from Nintendo Hawk at Skyward Crowbar. If there was to be league expansion in the nearest future, which city other than Seattle would get a team? So I think we all assume that Seattle is the next, you know, market to come to the NBA or come back to the NBA in their case. So who would join Seattle? I'm guessing you would need to add, well, you wouldn't necessarily need to add an Eastern Conference team. You also wouldn't necessarily need to add a second team. The NBA has been very comfortable having uneven numbers in terms of teams in the past. They had 27 for years. They had 29 for years. Now resting at 30. So if you needed a 32nd team besides the Seattle Supersonics, I guess St. Louis would be an option. You know, St. Louis has been rumored. There have been rumors of Virginia Beach. There have been rumors of Anaheim. I don't think they'd add a third LA team. But the idea of adding, you know, another team to a major market. I know Ethan Sherwood-Strauss has talked about how Chicago could, you know, maybe should have two teams because it's such a big market. Maybe, you know, you probably couldn't add one into Austin if you're going to go into Texas. I don't think New Mexico is a viable one. I guess maybe that's when we start getting into the discussion of Las Vegas as a possible destination for the NBA. Once again, you have to deal with gambling and everything that you know, gets lumped into that. But Adam Silver has talked about, you know, gambling possibly being a future part of the NBA and that culture. So maybe, I guess I would say Vegas or St. Louis are your two most likely options. Maybe they go back into Canada. Maybe they try a different market in Canada, or try Vancouver again. Maybe they try Montreal. You know, I don't really know what major markets they could go to, but just getting Seattle back would be pretty cool. At Aiden McCoy wonders, LeBron or Klay Thompson? I'm going to assume this was trying to be clever because it's obviously LeBron. At CPO tweet stuff, are you buying stock in Hassan Whiteside? Hashtag Hassassin. I think you can. Now, we get into this interesting conversation with Hassan Whiteside. He was really bad and, you know, labeled as immature his first couple years in the league. That's how he kind of found himself out of the league, because he wasn't really ready to be a professional basketball player. Went over to China, went to the D League, you know, has really kind of grown into the role that you would need him to be in. And since joining the Miami Heat, it's been a success. I think you can easily say that they found a good player to join that rotation to be an important part of their team. With that said, you know, there's going to be an interesting question of how he responds once he gets paid. Even though he's playing well, you know, he's had some answers and some quotes where that makes you think, like, maybe he's just figured out to play, but he hasn't figured out the immaturity label, or maybe that label was unfair and he's just having fun or whatever. But you do have something with Hassan Whiteside where there will be a little bit of trepidation from some parties, not all parties, but some parties, when it comes to, you know, giving him a big contract with this next contract. Because I think we can all assume that he's going to have a pretty good-sized contract next time he becomes an unrestricted free agent. And from there, you know, whether Miami wants to throw big money at him, whether another team wants to throw big money at him, Miami has been kind of clearing the decks to have flexibility in 2016. But if you kind of have to – if you have to dive into that cap space a little bit to keep Whiteside – you know, you really want to make sure that he's going to keep going. I don't think he would have there. You know, there's been some conversation with Timberwolves fans saying that they, you know, they missed on him by not trying to bring him in. I think it's important we realize Hassan Whiteside would not be doing this on just about any team. I don't know that he'd be doing it on Minnesota. I actually don't think he would be playing this well. I think Miami is a special kind of organization that puts guys in a situation to succeed right away. As long as they buy in, you know, they use guys correctly, they prepare guys correctly. I don't think he could have gone just anywhere. I think it takes a certain level of organization, and I don't think the Timberwolves would have been that. I think the Miami Heat are that. You know, teams like the Spurs, the Mavericks, or, you know, really well-run organizations like that who have a culture, who stick by that culture. I think they would have been able to make it work. But I don't think teams just necessarily missed on Hassan Whiteside, because it took him a long time to figure out how to be an effective player. And whether you would have drafted him, you know, right away, I think in, what was it, 2011, 2010, whatever that was, I think 2010, he wouldn't have become the player he is unless he gets, you know, cut and he gets forced to grow up a little bit on the court. So I'm buying stock in him. I still want to see how things are after he gets his contract. At JTH224B, if you had to or got to wear one Russell Westbrook outfit out to a late night Miami establishment, which would you choose? I don't have a specific one in mind. I know I'm not going with anything involving a leather or pleather jacket. I don't think that would be a good look on me. Give me that. He had like a shirt in the finals a couple years ago that basically looked like fishing lures or something as a design on that. And I think he was wearing those Sally Jesse Raphael glasses. Give me that look. I'll rock that look for him and have a good time. At Sir_Fahrenheit, is this bad? It looks bad. It's Chandler Parsons shooting charts. I guess it's supposed to be bad. I mean, it's shooting charts aren't great, but I don't know that it's something to worry about. I wonder how Mavericks fans feel about Chandler Parsons this year, because I think he started out with that kind of rocky game, and he stabilized himself, and he's been a little up and down with effectiveness. I think he's still getting used to the new culture, the new style, the new coach and all that. Because he's making a lot of money, some people will say, oh, he's overpaid or he's overrated or he's over whatever. I think you got to give guys a chance to get comfortable in a situation. I think as long as he's fine by the playoffs and he's stabilized by the playoffs, I still think it's a great contract for him and for them, and I think that's a good fit. And you put him, on a court with Rondo, with Monte, with Dirk, with Tyson Chandler, he's going to be really good. So the shooting's a little inconsistent, but I think he's a good enough shooter to feel confident in him moving forward. At Chris Barnwell asks, of coaches on the hot seat right now, gives Brian Shaw, Jacques Vaughn, Scott Brooks with a question mark, Monty Williams, who's most likely to get another job if fired? I would say Scott Brooks would be the first one on that list, just because he's had success. Whether you believe he's responsible for that success or not, that record will matter, and he has a very good record. I would say after that, it's Brian Shaw. I think people believe in him. I think it's a weird situation in Denver that probably won't end well, but I think he'll end up being a good coach. I think he's one of those guys that needs a certain mixture of the right players for his system in order to be. I don't know that he can, we've seen, he can't really deviate that far from what he wants to make it a successful venture, but I think if you give him the right roster with the kind of style of play he wants, he could succeed. After that, I'd say, I guess, Jacques Vaughn and Monty Williams. I'm higher on Vaughn than I am on Monty. I think people know I'm not very high on Monty Williams coaching. I think a better coach would be doing not just more with that, because obviously better coaches would do more with that roster. I just think they would do a lot more with that roster. That team, it's tricky. Like I don't truly think they're good enough to be a playoff team in the West in terms of talent, but you can utilize that team so much better. He's supposed to be a defensive coach, and the team's too mediocre on defense with Anthony Davis there, with Drew Holiday there, with Omer Sheikh there to be as bad as they are. AVDIJK15. The Clippers are the number one offensive rating team again. Do you think the Mavs are better offensively than the Clippers? I would say the Mavericks are. I know their offense has dropped since they acquired Rondo. Their defense has also become vastly improved. I saw this. I pulled up the stat a couple days ago. I think it was they were first in offense and 20th in defense before the Rondo move. After the Rondo move, they dropped to 6th in offense, but I think they're up to 7th in defense, or maybe they're 7th in offense, 6th in defense, one of those combinations. I would still say Dallas has a better offense, because I think their end-of-game offense is much better. especially this year. Doc Rivers is kind of doing the same stuff he did last year, but has a lower rate of success right now. They really need to improve in clutch offense. So while their entire game offense is better, you're going to see more situations where they need to be good in the clutch, and I think Dallas is much better in the clutch than what the Clippers have shown. At Jason 481 wants to know, where is this national narrative that the Warriors are soft coming from? I have a direct answer for you that I can't give you because we do have a policy of not ripping other media members in the industry. So I will not give a specific example of where it came from, but let's just say there is a local writer with a semi-national voice who decided to spout off that he thinks that Curry is not reliable with his health and that the Warriors rely too much on the three and they're soft defensively. That's just asinine. It's really dumb. It shows you don't pay attention to them, and whatever. Some people don't want to pay attention to all the teams, but the Warriors have proven themselves that they're still the best defense in the league. You typically aren't the best defense in the league and a soft team at the same time. I don't know if we're still in this weird idea with some people that outside shooting kind of equates to being a team that's afraid to go inside. This team spreads you out. They take advantage of their shooters on the outside. They get shots inside because of it. They're very good at both. They're not a soft team. It doesn't mean they're going to win the title, but it also, to say that this is a soft team, just shows me you're not really paying attention. Let's see what this name is. At MNJ's NBA Focus, do you see anyone falling out of the playoffs in the West to make room for teams like OKC and New Orleans? If so, which team? Let's go to the standings. I believe Phoenix is still eighth right now as of the time I'm recording this, which is about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Pod going up on a Tuesday, by the way. All right, the Thunder are 2.5 games behind the Phoenix Suns. The Pelicans are 1.5 games behind the Phoenix Suns. Your number 1 through 7 is Golden State, Memphis, Portland, Clippers, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio. Unless there are major, major, major injuries, multiple injuries to any of those teams, they're not falling out of the Western playoffs, so it leaves Phoenix to be the only one susceptible to falling out. I think the Thunder end up getting it just because it's hard for me to imagine that with as much time as they will have had, even though they've missed significant time, I think the Thunder, and I think the Thunder with Durant and Westbrook will find a way to make up those 2.5 games, keep New Orleans on their backs by the end of it, and keep Phoenix on their backs by the end of it. They're just too good. Those players are just too good. I think this New Orleans stuff is a little bit of smoke and mirrors for them. Some of the success has happened without Drew Holiday, and that's great, but I just don't think they're as good as their record shows. I think the Thunder are better than their record shows. I think Phoenix is about as good as their record shows, but Oklahoma City will end up overtaking them. At Alan Mark CA, maybe a fun hypothetical. If you were to switch Atlanta and Golden State's coaching staffs, how would both teams fare? Actually, I like this question a lot. So you're putting Steve Kerr, Alvin Gentry, Adams, the whole Warriors coaching staff with the Warriors, and you're putting Budenholzer and company, or with the Hawks, and you're putting Budenholzer and company with the Warriors. I think that the Warriors' brand of basketball would end up being better under Budenholzer. Maybe I'm just too high on Budenholzer's coaching. I don't think there would be a huge difference with both. I think both teams would actually get better in a way, but I think I'd like Budenholzer with the Warriors more than I'd like Kerr with the Hawks, if that makes any sense. At Impin Ain't Easy 1, did your trip to Georgia change any reticence about how far the Hawks can go? Hope you didn't actually go through Macon, Georgia. It's a pit. No, I still feel the same way about the Hawks. I mean, it was cool to see them in person and talk to people in the organization and everything. That always changes your mindset a little bit. I think more it was just it changed my perception on the culture around the Hawks and with the fans and with the organization and everything. But I still feel like Chicago's the best contender. I feel like Cleveland can be the best contender. I'm always hesitant with, and I've talked about this with a few people, and some people disagree and some people agree around the league, but I'm always just hesitant with teams that don't have a focus in terms of scoring. And the idea is, hey, That shot can come from anywhere when they need it. And that can be hard to defend. And I agree, but it's harder to defend in the regular season than it is in a seven-game series. And when you get into a seven-game series and the Hawks don't know where that shot's going to come from, that can bother them. It doesn't always have to bother them because we've seen teams like the Spurs excel at that. And not to discount anybody on the Hawks, but they don't have a Tim Duncan. They don't have a Manu Ginobili. They don't have a Tony Parker. Like, those three guys are better than the guys the Hawks have at their peaks when they're doing that. So I still am a little worried that we might see a Denver Nuggets-ish type of situation. Not that, clear-cut and mirror image, but something like that. But I think the style can work in the playoffs. I still got to see it work, and I still think Chicago is probably the best contender right now, although you got to like the way Cleveland's starting to surge ahead. Washington, I don't know that I trust their bench enough. I'd like to see a little bit more out of Bradley Beal and a little bit more out of Nene. And then with Toronto, Valanciunas has to step up, and I think that they got to either make a move and get a better power forward presence, or they got to get more out of Amir Johnson or the Amir Johnson-Patrick Patterson combination. But all those teams are really good. I just think that I still think there's a hierarchy. The Hawks are around that 1-2 combination. At NPitcher 10, Nicholas Pitcher wants to know, if you were put in charge of All-Star Weekend, what would you add? I've always thought that the skills competition should be open. They should have a guard edition, they should have a big man edition, and then they should have the two kind of go against each other with, you curb the field or the time or whatever for the, you kind of change it in the big man's favor a little bit in order for the slower guy to be able to compete with the faster guy. So I think that would be fun. Let's see how this change goes with the Rising Stars game, where they're making it, an international thing, and that helps now because Wiggins is international. You have Giannis. You have enough young international guys, Mirotić, guys like that, to Rudy Gobert. You have enough young guys that can make this more of a U.S. against the world type of thing. So I'd like to see how that does, but I do think the Rising Stars game needs to somehow have more competition or more on the line or something to make it less of an and-one mixtape show and more of a basketball game. Although I'm not saying like they need to try hard on defense and all this stuff. I just think it's a little too sloppy, and turning it into just like this random dunk off in the last minute of a game is weird. Like, it could be fun, but it's weird. I do like moments where Greg Monroe, steals a self bounce pass by somebody. I think it was John Wall. So I like moments like that, but I try to get a little more competition in that game. I think maybe I like the idea of like a chucker 3-point contest. Like, maybe the more like the streakier guys against the better shooters. Like, have a winner from the streaky guys, from the gunners, have a winner from the better shooters, and then have them go off against each other, like more of a bracket style. They used to do it where, they had 8 shooters and 2 would go at the same time and all this stuff, and they've changed it to a fact where now I think we get maybe 6 shooters and just 2 rounds. I liked it when it was 8 and 3 rounds. So I think I'd maybe go back to that format. I'd try to bring more competition into the dunk contest. I think a guy like Zach LaVine would really help, which he'll be in it and he'll win it, I would assume. I think you have to know your field, and maybe you bring in D League guys to compete in the NBA dunk contest. Not just like, the winner of the D League goes off against the winner of the NBA. No, just put them all in there, because for years, I don't know what happened to him, but for a while we had Tirico White as like this guy, this fringe guy in the Pistons organization. And I don't think he was up with the team. Maybe he wasn't even on the team once we got to the All-Star break, but like, that dude should have been in a dunk contest. Tony Mitchell should be in a dunk contest for the NBA. Markel Brown, I don't think he's in the D-League. I think he's just with the Nets. But that guy should be in the dunk contest. Like, you have to know your dunking competition, the guys who are good at dunking in the league. The league office has to know that, and they have to go get those guys. Markel Brown would do the dunk contest, and he would give anybody a run for their money. I still think I'd pick Zach LaVine to win it, but he'd give him a run for their money. You know, James White for years would have been a phenomenal all-time dunk contest contestant. He didn't get in until he was 31 because he wasn't really in the NBA until he was 31. So, you know, you just have to make the dunk contest exciting. It's not by doing all the gimmicks. You don't do the dunk wheel. You don't do the format. Like, I tried to buy into the format last year, and we got into a situation where they didn't know how to declare a winner. Like, you should have just been eliminating these guys. You know, you can eliminate by conference, and then you have the guys from if Wall and who was it? Wall and Ross and Paul George. Like, all those guys end up winning their individual matchups with the West. Well, then they should have been in the finals to find out who the dunk contest champion was. And so the format was okay, but it was unfinished. And so I think you just got to get the right dunkers and you got to get the right guys involved. So I don't think you need to add a lot of gimmicks. I guess people want a one-on-one contest when it comes to the NBA All-Star Weekend. That would be fine. I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think a lot of guys would buy in anyway, so I think it would get sloppy. You basically just have Nick Young challenging everybody, which could be fun. At Failure Disciple, that's a great name. Besides Toronto, which top four East teams could be ousted by the Cavs? So I think I think the Cavs could beat the Bulls. I think they could beat the Hawks. I think they could beat the Wizards, and I guess the other team would be the Bucks are the next best team. I think they could beat any of those teams. Now, will they? I don't know, but I think they're talented enough to beat any of those teams. And then the same question: besides Portland, which top four West team could be ousted by San Antonio? Any of them. Any team in the West could be ousted by San Antonio. I know they struggled. I know Boris Diaw has been really bad. They've been, you know, dealing with injuries to Kawhi and Tony Parker and everybody, and they've been resting guys and all that stuff. I still think the Spurs are as good as anybody once we get to the playoffs. At Tab 027, how is Beno Udrych not Sixth Man of the Year? Because he's not. I don't really know. I guess it's tough to figure out who is Sixth Man of the Year. Jamal Crawford will be up there. I guess Taj Gibson's up there still. Who else? Someone from the Warriors. Maybe Andre Iguodala should be up there. Lou Williams should be up there. There's a fair number of guys who should be up there. Beno, I guess, can be up there too, but I don't think you can just say he's the Sixth Man of the Year. At Green B Hybrid wants to know, what is your favorite Chappelle Show skit? It's the one I can't name, so I think you guys can figure that out. At Gray TR wants to know, can Deion Waiters work in Oklahoma City? What teams or schemes would be a good fit for him, if any? This is the funny thing about Deion Waiters. We've gone so far against him, and I still think he has a lot of maturity on the court to work on, and a lot of basketball stuff on the court to work on. But he's a solid scorer. Like, I think him in that six-man role, I think there's great value to having that gunner mentality in a six-man role. Now, it doesn't mean you have to put him in at the end of games and give him the ball and tell him, you know, you have to pass to Kevin Durant or you have to pass to Russell Westbrook. I think he works with Oklahoma City. I think I like the style that they're using him. I like the role that they're using him. I don't think he works with Reggie Jackson. I think they're too similar. And I'd rather have Deion over Reggie based on what we've seen from Reggie this year. I liked Reggie last year a lot, but Reggie Jackson's been terrible this year. Part of that might be fit. Part of that might be the contract situation. I think he'll probably, if he goes to a new team, I think he'll succeed there. But Deion seems more accepting of this role or better able to thrive in this role rather than what Reggie has done this year. That could turn around pretty quickly. Reggie's a talented guy. But I also would rather have the better three-point shooter. Reggie's an abysmal three-point shooter. Deion is actually pretty good for his career. And I think that would hold up a little bit. So I like Deion with OKC. I think you need to bring him off the bench as a six-man type, and that's really where he excels. At Aussie Piston wants to know, can Detroit make a run at the 8 seed without Jennings? As of right now, they are 2 games behind the Charlotte Hornets. They are 1.5 for the 8 seed. They're 1.5 games behind Brooklyn, who's only a half game behind the Charlotte Hornets. Yeah, they can make a run without Brandon Jennings. It's more difficult. You have to rely on DJ Augustine to be good. If DJ plays like he did for the Bulls, I think he can have that level of success under Stan Van Gundy. Then it makes it a lot more palatable. They still need a backup point guard. I don't know if that's Will Bynum or someone else. But, you know, Brooklyn is banged up and Darren Williams is hurt. Charlotte is, you know, they're losing Kemba Walker for some amount of time with his knee surgery. There's plenty of opportunity to still make the playoffs without mortgaging the future. I liked what Stan Van Gundy told reporters today, and I wrote about it a little bit on CBS Sports. I think it shows a good amount of perspective for the long term or short term. Van Gundy would love to win the playoffs. He'd love to win the playoffs, but he'd love to make the playoffs this year. But he knows that mortgaging a pick or someone like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or some kind of young asset just to get a point guard to survive this time without Jennings, just to make the playoffs this year, it's bad for the long-term perspective. And the long-term perspective is why he took over both president of basketball operations and the coaching position. It's so that he could get through that. He could have control of both, and he could find the right balance to do it. Some guys aren't good at that. Some guys are. You know, Popovich was great for it for years. I think Doc Rivers has been under fire, and deservedly so. We talked about it with Dan Wyke on the podcast a little bit, with Matt and James. Doc is not taking care of the future of this organization. He is going for win now. As long as you win now, that's fine. But, you know, when you get to the – If you don't win that title, or if you don't make the finals, and then you don't have those cost-effective players to add to bolster the team later on, you know, that really hurts your ability to stay a contender for a long time. And so, you know, Doc's kind of mortgaged that. Van Gundy knows that the goal is not to make the playoffs. The goal is to become a title contender. You don't do that by mortgaging your assets if you don't have that contending roster now. And so I think they can still make the 8th seed. I actually still think I would pick them to make the 8th seed even without Jennings. But I like that. I like that he's not just going to trade a good asset to go get a player. At TailStev, Steve Taylor wants to know, are midday naps a great thing or the greatest thing? I do enjoy a good nap. I don't nap all that often, which maybe would get me kicked off the internet. The trick is you don't want that 2-3 hour nap in the middle of the day. I think you just need like a half hour, but you have to really be asleep. You're not just resting, but you get that half hour, and it really just kind of resets everything. It refreshes you. That's really the way to go. Don't be sleep deprived and say, all right, well, as long as I sleep from 1 to 4, I'll be fine. That's a bad habit to get into. So take your 30-minute nap, really nap hard, shut everything off, and then come back refreshed for the rest of your day. But yeah, midday naps can be a great thing. I wouldn't say the greatest thing, because that's Rasheed Wallace and Ricky Davis. But it's definitely up there. At NBA Doug, Douglas Martin wants to know, who are your top 5 rookies for the rest of the season? Let's take a look at the rookies we have. The rookies we have, I guess we've lost so many rookies. We lost, you know, Jabari. We never got Joel Embiid. We lost Julius Randle. Lost a lot of guys, but my top rookies for the rest of the season, Andrew Wiggins is definitely at the top. He's the best rookie. He'll be the rookie of the year. He's really shown that over the last month. I think he's going to be the top guy. I like Mirotić for the Bulls. I like Nurkic for the Nuggets. I would say Elfrid Payton is in there for me. And then last one's tricky. I think Smart, I think Noel, I think KJ McDaniels. I like Jeremy Grant a lot now. I'm trying to think who else could be up there. Dante Exum may get, you know, some real opportunity. I'll say Nerlens Noel. I think we're going to see his game even continue to grow. There's a good spot with him on Inside Stuff this weekend, talking about his workouts with Brett Brown and his, you know, getting used to playing and all this stuff. That I enjoyed. I think people should check it out. You can probably find it on the NBA's YouTube channel. But I'll say Nerlens Noel is your 5th rookie in that top 5. But Wiggins, Mirotić, Nurkic, Elfrid Payton, and then Nerlens Noel. At Rosie87, how do you feel about a Mortal Kombat-style 3-point contest? Rookie shoots against an increasingly difficult ladder of shooters. I think that would take a really long time, and it's hard to sell people on long events. It kind of turns into like a horse-style event, which horse did not work. I like the idea in theory. I don't think you can do it in application. At Chechevet, Zachary Chechevet wants to know, can you rank NBA writer/blogger sneaker collections? I don't have enough information to tell you a definitive list by any means, but I know Russ Bankston has a great collection. Lang Whitaker has a great connection collection. Trey Kirby has a great collection. I believe Skeets has a good one. Who are some? I'm forgetting someone, and someone will freak out. But those guys all have really good. I would say Russ. I would assume Russ has the best. Lang has the second best, and then outside of that, oh, you know, NBA writers. Israel Gutierrez has a phenomenal shoe game. So those guys would be off the top of my head the top ones. At Wilcox 1232 wants to know: are the Wolves going to move pieces for picks? Peck, Thad, Kevin Martin, if healthy, and Mo Williams could all be useful in contenders. They sure could. It's just, when it comes to Peck, who's going to take that contract? He's still got 3 years of pretty good-sized money after this season, and he has injury concerns. So I don't know, you can trade for him, give up a pick, and feel confident that you're going to get him for the amount of time you need him. Thad Young is probably their most attractive trade asset right now. He would be a rental. I just don't think you're getting a first-round pick for any of these guys, and I think their veteran presence does matter, so you can't just give them away. I don't think Kevin Martin can get you more than a second-round pick, and that's tricky for getting money for taking on that money as well. I don't think Mo Williams. I don't know that there are a lot of teams that need that backup point guard that are willing to give up, a pick for him. Maybe Cleveland could give up a second-round pick for him. I'm not quite sure how that would go, but it's just not that easy to trade veterans for picks. At Miami Heat Fan 108 wants to know, could Hassan Whiteside be the next David Robinson? Also, should the Heat trade for a point guard? I do not believe Hassan Whiteside could be the next David Robinson. Hassan's 25. That's not old, but if he was going to be David Robinson, we would have seen shades of that by now. But he'd still be a very good starting center in this league. The Heat have 3 point guards. I still think Chalmers is their best and should be their full-time point guard. Norris Cole I don't really think is very good. And Shabazz Napier is still a little ways away, but I think they have enough point guards. I think they need to work on, getting more wings that can really contribute and kind of spell Dwayne Wade a little bit. And finally, Daniel_Rouse, I think it's Rouse, maybe Ruse. If there was to be a straight to DVD action movie about your life, who would you cast as you and who would your co-star be? Obviously co-star would be Nick Cage, and clearly Rasheed Wallace would be cast in his first movie role as me, just because that would be a selfish way of being cool. But, I don't know that there's a lot of action in this action movie about my life. That seems like it'd be a bit of a hard sell, but I think you put Rasheed Wallace in any vehicle, it'll come out really well. All right, before we go, let's do some games for tonight. Do the picks. We've got a 7 o'clock game. Toronto Raptors are at the Indiana Pacers. The Raptors are receiving 3 points. I like the Raptors to cover and win, obviously. The Cleveland Cavaliers are visiting the Detroit Pistons. Pistons are given 8.5, so Cleveland's giving 8.5 points. Cleveland's on a hot streak right now. Detroit could be scrappy without Jennings, but I think Cleveland will win and cover that one, so I'll take Cleveland. Milwaukee Bucks are at the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are giving 2 points, so must mean Chris Bosh and Hassan Whiteside and Dwayne Wade, the new big three, are all playing. I guess I like Miami to win that and to cover, although I don't feel great about that one. The Memphis Grizzlies are at the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are giving 6 points. Makes me think Mike Conley is not going to play tonight, so I will take I'll take the Dallas Mavericks to cover against the Grizzlies without Mike Conley. We've got probably the game of the night, although Grizzlies-Dallas could be really good. Chicago Bulls are at the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are 10.5-point favorites against the Bulls. I believe no Jimmy Butler tonight. I think he's injured. I don't know how you go against the Warriors. I mean, that's a lot of points, but even against the Bulls, even without Jimmy Butler, yeah, give me the Warriors minus 10.5. I like that. I'm taking all favorites here. And then the Wizards are the late game along with the Warriors. So Wizards at Lakers. Wizards minus 8. I'm guessing no Swaggy P. Obviously no Kobe. Give me the Wizards to win and cover. So that means I've got all 6 favorites covering tonight, which is just a horrible way to bet. that's going to be all for the EOB pod today. Appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you guys supporting. If you can, one, tell a friend. Two, go on iTunes and leave a 5-star review. 4-star review works too. Anything other than that, no need. But with the reviews, the subscriptions, that all matters with the rankings on iTunes and everything. We do appreciate the support. Again, if you want a question answered, not just on a solo pod, but any EOB pod, hashtag it on Twitter with EOB pod, or you can send an email to Zach, ZACH.Harper@CBSinteractive.com. Get buckets, everybody.